In May of 2011, I was seated in the back seat of a taxi cab in Chicago, where I was living at the time. Spring had finally sprung in May, and the academic year was almost finished. Riding along Lakeshore Drive, the driver turned down the radio just a touch and said, "So, are you ready for the end of the world?" His tone was casual for such a cosmic question. It's like he asked me if the Cubs were playing at home that week. I said, "Excuse me?" Pretending I hadn't heard him and trying to buy time. "Are you ready for the end of the world? It's supposed to happen on May 21st, 6 p.m. This was news to me. But for the rest of the ride, my driver, which the ride felt longer than it actually was, but the driver updated me on the latest end times prediction that was sweeping the radio. Fortunately, doing so left him no time to ask what I did for a living. Each year, as the liturgical year reaches its conclusion, the mass readings focus our attention on the end times. It's true today, and spoiler alert, it will be true for the next two Sundays. Generally speaking, these readings reflect a basic Christian belief that time, which God entered definitively in the incarnation of Jesus, is not infinite. It will have a conclusion, and that involves the second coming of Christ. Every Sunday we say, and we'll say it again in a moment, he will come again in glory to judge the living and the dead. And these readings that we're going to hear draw our attention to words that we say each Sunday, but may not entirely hear when we say them. Apart from believing that there will be an end, the Christian tradition is a bit conflicted on this topic, to say the least. And it's been that way for a long time. We're all aware of those who invoke the end in order to induce fear. And if you're not aware of this, I encourage you just to go on the internet, say. But the earliest Christians who thought that Jesus would return at any moment viewed his second coming as a source of great hope. Which is it? The Gospels themselves don't agree on what's going to happen when the end comes. In today's passage from Mark that I just read, Jesus describes dramatic signs of the coming end. Tribulations followed by the sun and the moon losing their light. Stars falling from the skies. It's a kind of cosmic power outage. With so many tribulations of our own in society, in the church, with wildfires raging and seas rising, it can be tempting to wonder if it might just be the end after all. But then in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus tells a different story, and we read it a few days ago at Mass. There won't be any fire or brimstone to let us know that the end is nigh. There he says it's going to be quick, sudden, not a lot of fanfare. People will just be taken while in bed, while grinding wheat, while going about their lives. The concern behind these texts, including the first reading from the prophet Daniel, is not so much to describe in fine detail the end of the world as we know it. Nor is it about figuring out the precise date and time of the second coming, with all due respect to my cab driver. The point is to stir up our anticipation so that no matter when it comes, no matter what it looks like, we're ready. And that preparation happens not in the distant future, but now. What would you do today if you knew you were going to die tomorrow? We've all heard these kinds of questions, but they're more than interesting thought experiments because our answers tend to reveal our priorities. The perspective of the end, whether it's the end of our own life or the end of time, can reveal to us how we are living in this present moment and can show us how we wish we were living. It's the same thing with these apocalyptic readings. Am I ready for the end of the world? And if I knew it would end tomorrow, what would I do today? Very few of us, I imagine, would say, nothing. You know, I'll just do what I normally do. But like many of you, my own agenda for the last day would be really rather mundane. It would be full of things that I do already, but not enough. I'd pray. I'd tell those I love that I love them and try to spend time with them. I'd utter those words that I know I need to say, but that can seem so hard and even impossible to say. I was wrong and I'm sorry. Forgive me. I miss you. I love you. Forget the end of time for a moment. Many of us will gather around dinner tables this Thursday, where those very words might be a true source of grace and indeed of thanksgiving, both in the saying and in the receiving, in the hearing. We know not the day nor the hour when the end will come, hence the urgency behind these readings. And their question to me, and I think to all of us, is indeed, are we ready? And if not, what are we waiting for?